You've reached the Every Little Thing Grunt line. Grunt, 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 grunt.
Hey, Flora, I have a question for you. What is the deal with cavemen? Did they actually carry around big clubs and wear furs? Is everything we know about them just a myth, or is some of this stuff true? Thanks for letting me know. Bye.
Hello?
Hey, Lauren, it's Flora from ELT.
Hey, Flora.
How do you yabba-dabba-do?
Oh, boy.
So what made you pick up your mammoth horn and give us a ring?
I think I was at a hospital in a waiting room, and there was a guy talking on his phone really, really loudly around a bunch of sad, kind of sick people. And this older gentleman stood up and really loudly shouted at him, "Stop acting like a caveman."
What happened? How did the caveman respond?
Just a dirty look, and he walked away. So I guess it worked, technically. And it just got me thinking, how much of what we think about cavemen was informed just by TV and comics, or how much of it is actually true? And where did that phrase come from, acting like a caveman? Why do we use that to describe somebody who's behaving badly?
Where did your image of caveman come from? Like, if you close your eyes, who do you picture?
It's a little bit of a mix of Fred Flintstone and that little cartoon comic strip guy whose name I do not remember.
BC?
That's it. Yeah, I think that BC character really has sort of like the OG caveman look when you think about a caveman. He was like this really shaggy-haired caveman dude, very, very dirty, possibly with a club, wearing some kind of animal skin clothing.
I know, cavemen are always in a one-shouldered dress.
Always the one-shouldered thing. Yeah, that hasn't gotten out of style in terms of caveman dress.
They're always stooped and kind of brutish.
Yeah, kind of hunched over, being rude, being loud, not being aware of like social mores. It's like an angry, wild man type of trope.
So what do you want to know?
I guess I want to know where this idea of the cartoon caveman came from and how much of what we know about cave people is actually true and how much is the Flintstones.
These are our ancestors. What were they like?
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's in some way going back and actually examining your family tree.
Right, and wanting to know the real deal. Like, was great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-uncle Og, like, really a dick with a club who pulled women around by the hair or not?
Exactly, I must know.
Well, I think we found just the person to dig into your question.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I specialize in cave people.
So that's Melanie Chang. She's a paleoanthropologist at Portland State University.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Melanie.
Let's start by defining cave person, or as experts call them, Homo cavemanus.
Is that a real thing?
No. I usually just say ancient humans.
When we talk about cavemanity, we are talking about Homo sapiens, Homo neanderthalensis, all the big-brained homos, living, laughing, loving. From 500,000 years ago to 10,000 years ago.
Got it.
And since we're going to be talking about this particular variety of caveman a lot, a quick note on pronunciation. Is it Neanderthal or Neanderthal?
It's Neanderthal, because it, even when it was customarily spelled with an H, it wasn't pronounced in German.
Neanderthal?
Yes, tall. And it's because tall means valley in Germany, and the name comes from the Neander Valley in Germany where their bones were first found.
Oh, that makes sense.
So before we find out whether they rocked clubs and one-shouldered fur dresses, I want to tell you about where the caveman stereotype originated. Any guesses for when the caveman image first showed up?
I'm trying to think of what came first. Was it the Flintstones or this BC comic? Because I have a feeling that had something to do with it.
Actually, it dates back more than a century.
Wow. I'm waiting with bated breath.
Okay, so in the mid-1800s, bits and pieces of mysterious fossil skeletons started turning up in Europe. They looked almost human, but not exactly. So researchers did all of these sedimental gymnastics to try to explain them.
The original Neander Valley specimen was interpreted by a famous pathologist and his colleagues as being the remains of a Cossack army deserter who had, you know, crawled into a cave and died and had rickets and had a big brow ridge because he frowned all the time because he was in pain.
But the problem was that more and more of these skeletons that looked almost human, but not quite, kept turning up.
Can't explain that away.
once you found like, you know, a dozen or so of these skeletons and they all look like this, it becomes very difficult to interpret them all as army deserters with rickets who frowned a lot.
But then a blockbuster book came out that made scientists think about these bones in a new way. It rhymes with porridge in the feces. I'll give you six guesses.
The Origin of Species.
It was a very convincing document.
Darwin's theory of evolution changed the way people saw these bones. Scientists started to think, maybe these are the remains of our ancestors.
Okay, that makes sense.
And naturally, people started to wonder, what did our ancient ancestors look like?
Yeah.
No selfies were found with the bones, unfortunately, so artists got busy drawing. And Melanie says one image in particular had a big impact, so big that it still shapes how we see cavemen today.
Huh.
It's a drawing based on a Neanderthal specimen found in France in 1908.
We usually refer to it as La Chapelle, the old man from La Chapelle. So this specimen was discovered in the early 1900s, and it was described very extensively by a French anthropologist named Marcelin Boule.
It was big news, and newspapers and magazines wanted an image to make the story pop. So based on Boule's description, an artist whipped up an illustration.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to text it to you.
Okay.
And if you're on Spotify, check out our episode page right now, and you can see it, or you can go to our Instagram, and you can find it there, at ELT Show.
Okay, got a text. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's not what I was expecting. That looks like Bigfoot.
Describe what you're seeing.
Seeing kind of a hunched over, very ape-looking man with fur all over the body. He has a real scowl on his face and a bit of a vacant stare. And oh, I think he has a club in his hand.
And he's super muscular.
Oh, very much so. Look at the pecs on him. I guess all they had is some bones. How'd they know he was so muscular? That's some big leaps there, I think.
Yeah, so we asked Melanie about this, and she said some of the cave dude's traits were based on actual evidence.
For example, this illustration shows somebody who's stocky and has relatively short limbs and is very muscular. And those are all things that we know were true about Neanderthals. So there's that, but then there's a whole lot of stuff that is just sort of coloring in between the vaguely drawn lines.
One thing that got creatively colored in was this Neanderthal's anatomy, the man part of caveman.
Did they think maybe they had to know what gender it was, no?
No, listen to this.
I mean, it's sort of like this unspoken dirty secret of human paleontology, which is that we assign sex to skeletons, and most of the time we have no idea, actually. So we tend to go by characteristics like overall robusticity or size, basically, because, you know, among modern humans, males tend to be larger and more robust than females. So we apply those same interpretations to the fossil record, but what that ends up meaning is that the ones that are sort of like big and lumberjacky, we call male, and the ones that seem like smaller and cuter and prettier, we call female.
Wow, that rocks my world.
Other features were a guess as well. The skin, the Steven Tyler hair, the wooden tool you see in his hand, they had to be guesses too, because unlike bones, all that stuff deteriorates. So the anthropologist and artist had to make it up.
You have to make all sorts of judgment calls about how you're going to depict these things based on little to no evidence. And so we tend to start painting in things that reveal stuff about ourselves, about how we look at the world and how we look at other people.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, it's definitely colored by whoever's creating this image.
Yes.
Like the complexion of this individual, for example. I mean, he's hairy, but you were left with this overall impression that he's got very dark skin, which is the exact opposite of what you would expect as an anthropologist of a type of person who's living at the latitudes they were living at.
DNA evidence is fleshing out the picture today. But back then, the decision to give the old man at La Chapelle dark skin was counterintuitive.
So this, to me, reflects societal biases more than it reflects scientific facts.
And what bias is it reflecting?
Primitive people are dark. It's the idea that primitive people are dark, that that skin color and that specifically whiteness is associated with modern behavior and advanced cognition and all of that kind of good stuff, whereas peoples from other parts of the world who have darker skin tones were considered to be not as advanced.
Wow, you're kind of shattering all my illusions here.
Yeah, the caveman caricature has some racist roots.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
And the image stuck. In fact, Melanie said it went Victorian era viral. You know, like smallpox.
It rapidly found its way into the mainstream. So this is one of the few images that people would have had available. So it obviously formed a major component of how people thought about them. You know, you see the genesis of the caveman stereotype right there. Like, it's all there. You know, he's not standing upright. He's hairy. He's got a club in his hand. The only thing that's missing is he's not dragging a woman around by the hair.
That'll come later.
Right. That comes later.
It's interesting. How did they get from this to sort of the image of the caveman that we have today?
So I think of it this way. The old man from La Chapelle is the dawn of the caveman caricature, or at least some of his key traits. But the stereotype is a composite of many images. And even 100 years ago, there were different interpretations. Like, there's a drawing from 1911 of a caveman, and this dude looks much more like a barista than Bigfoot. Like, he has a caveman bun.
Oh, do you have that image?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, send me that. That sounds great. Oh, my goodness. It's hipster caveman. Shirtless, also very muscular.
Would you swipe right?
I totally would, yeah.
As you can see, there were different representations. And then since then, of course, some key media yabba-dabba-do a lot to influence our perception of cavemen.
So easy to use Geico.com. A caveman could do it.
I'm just a caveman. Your world frightens and confuses me.
It's all kind of coming together in my head now, that how this image was formed and came together. But I'm wondering, where did fur clothes come from?
It's time to find out. Lauren, are you ready to play Caveman Fact or Fiction?
Absolutely.
Hollow hunk, real or bunk? Grotto guy, true or lie?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we need another expert. Melanie specializes in the Neanderthal caveman, but call me biased, I also wanted to learn about Homo sapien cave people, so we're bringing on a Homo sapien who's an expert on Homo sapiens.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
This is Genevieve von Petzinger. She and Melanie are in the same caveman club.
I love Melanie. Yeah, she's a colleague of mine.
Let's start with the giant mammoth in the room.
What's that?
Did cavemen live in caves?
Yes, I must know.
Here's Melanie.
It appears that they did, yes. There are enough remains found in caves as well as, you know, archaeological remains to indicate they were spending a lot of time there.
Whew, something true. That's a relief.
The caveat is that cave people were not cave exclusive. We just happen to have a lot of fossils from caves because caves are great preservation chambers.
Ah, so we were more likely to find cavemen remains in caves?
Exactly. But some of our ancient ancestors wouldn't be caught dead in a cave. Genevieve told us about a site in Eastern Europe called Dolné Vestinici. 30,000 years ago, it was a tundra, not a lot of trees, but a big melting glacier created a lot of smaller vegetation,
which attracted the mammoth herds, the bison herds, the horse herds, like millions of animals.
Ah, kind of an animal oasis.
And that animal oasis attracted human beings, ancient Homo sapiens, and they needed a place to live.
But because they were up in these weird treeless tundra environments, they figured out that they could build with bone.
They can build with bone?
They lived in bone homes.
That's so cool.
But they built, in some cases, quite large structures.
Picture mammoth bones.
And of course, the ribs are huge, right? So they can use all those rib bones. And they also built fences around them, too, using the bone, probably to keep out all the predators.
Bone fences, too? Did they have, like, bone street lamps and bone cobblestone roads?
No, but they had kilns. But again, there were no trees. So you know what they burned?
What?
I'm going to give you one guess.
What would you burn if not trees?
We're going to find out after the break. Okay, Lauren, we're back. What's your guess on their fuel source?
You can't burn bones.
Bones?
You burn bones?
They actually burnt bone as their fuel source.
Wow, who knew?
They're bona fide builders.
Oh, boy.
That's the appropriate response to that joke.
I guess I know we're not going to have an image of a bone home, but I would kill to see that.
Coming your way.
Really? That is so cool. It's like a tent made out of bone and fur. Now, how much of this picture is true, Flora? You're making me question everything.
Yes, we've done our job. Okay, first round of Grotto Guy, truth or lie, is true. Cave people did live in caves, but not exclusively. They lived other places too. Next question, let's hit the clubs.
You're gonna bust that myth for me?
Clubs would be a no.
Clubs are going to the Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
I'm shocked. I mean, you'd think of it's like the easiest tool that a cave person would be able to access quickly.
No, they were much more sophisticated than that.
This is our assumptions working against us.
It's true, yeah. I'm kind of operating under these biases that have been handed down to me still.
Here's what you should picture instead.
In this bog in Germany, they actually found wooden spears that had preserved for 400,000 years, which is crazy. Those were Neanderthals, of course. They were fire-hardening the tips to make them more effective weapons. So these are not like club-carrying, grunting, hunched kind of caveman image. I mean, these guys were already using fire to modify things.
That's pretty cool.
Let's talk about caveman cuisine.
Yes, what did they eat?
I picture giant racks of ribs that would tip over their caveman cars.
A la Fred Flintstone again?
Exactly. Here's what Melanie said.
I don't know what a Neanderthal portion size would be, but there are some indicators that they had really high caloric requirements because they were so muscular and so massive. So some interpretations of Neanderthals have caloric requirements that are as high as like 7,000 kcals per day, which is like, you know, more than like a Tour de France cyclist eats in like a day while they're competing in the Tour de France.
7,000 per day. That's like a week's worth of calories for some people. So how many calories would a woolly mammoth rib be?
I don't know. The calories, it probably depends on how you cook it.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know if they had woolly mammoth sauces back then.
It's the sauce. That's always what gets those calories up.
It's good to know that something in the Flintstones was maybe kind of true.
The mammoth ribs.
Yep, it's decided. They ate gigantic racks of ribs.
Okay, next up, clothing.
Yeah, I really want to know about these one-shoulder fur dresses and fur kilts that we see all the time.
They did wear furs, for sure. But, you know, by 50,000 years ago, we have evidence of bone needles.
So yes, fur dresses, but maybe more sophisticated than that.
Up in a cave up on a mountain in Georgia, they found evidence of woven flax thread from 30 to 34,000 years ago, which is crazy because we didn't know that they could weave thread, right? And they had dyed it different colors, including, so you've got your grays and your blacks, but they also had turquoise and pink.
Pink caveman clothes. That's awesome. Oh, that makes me really happy.
Are you caving anything else?
No, I've learned so much. It sort of exceeds what my expectations were. They're actually so much cooler and so much better than what I think.
Are you tossing your old caveman caricature into the bone heap of history?
Absolutely. What a lie history is.
Well, Melanie said that's a good thing to keep in mind.
In human evolutionary studies, we have the evidence that we have, and we can make the interpretations that we're capable of making in a scientifically justifiable way, but they don't come anywhere near answering all the questions people actually want answered about human evolution. Like, they want to know if they carried gloves and what their clothes looked like. So somebody had to make that judgment call. You know, you see this in dioramas, you see this in like the wax figures, you see it in paintings. These are all things we have absolutely no evidence for that you have to come up with some solution for, because otherwise you can't flesh it out in a way that it's going to draw people in.
I'm glad I know. I feel like I need to get the word out about what the truth is about cave people now. they were much smarter than I think we give them credit for. We have been selling cavemen short.
I agree. Thanks for the great question, Lauren.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
If you have a question you cannot find an answer to, give us a call. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka, Doug Barron, Leah Granger, and Ruth Eddy. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just, scored and mixed by Dara Hirsch. BC Bonhomme. Goodbye.